All right. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back for this first show back after our Thanksgiving break. Well, I mean, I guess we still released on Thanksgiving, but it was a Thanksgiving break overall. So we are joined, or I am joined as always, by my co-host, Dr. Ross Chalice. And apparently, I'm a little rusty today.
That's, you know, having a couple days off, eating everything you wanted really affected your brain.
Apparently.
How's it going, everyone? Hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving. I know I did. Ate a little too much. Need to take a couple naps. And then Friday got back on track, and hopefully no one felt bad about eating too much. That's really what we've talked about as far as nutrition's concerned. Eat what you want on these special days that you're celebrating with family, and move on. So Adam, what was your guilty pleasure this year for Thanksgiving?
Oh, I'm trying to think if there's something that I definitely the dessert stuff, and not just that I never have dessert, but there are a lot of things that I specifically only tend to have at Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
apple pie, pumpkin pie. I don't really have those throughout the year. It's more just like a Thanksgiving thing. Chocolate pie, which is it's super simple, but maybe it's just because I don't have it that often.
Sure.
It's literally just
so delicious.
It's literally just chocolate pudding in a pie shell, but it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely say I'm not really fond of pies to begin with, but definitely on Thanksgiving, throw some whipped cream and ice cream on there.
Yep.
So that's usually my guilty pleasure. I don't eat a ton of bread, but you know, usually there's some type of bread stuffing. Load up too much on, and usually the days following, I'll usually take the leftovers and make a Thanksgiving sandwich.
Oh, so man, after my own heart, I love that.
Yeah,
I do
usually
that every year.
The best part. So I'm trying to think what else. Yeah, but that's pretty much it, and then I get back on track, and here we are, and we're back for another show. So, recently, Adam and I have been getting a lot of questions about pain, and more specifically, if someone has pain, should they just take the day off, or should they train through it? So we felt it was important to kind of discuss this with everyone, because really it comes down to it depends, and hopefully there's more clarification by the time we get to the end of today's show. You know, at the end of the day, pain is not necessarily a bad thing. We have to recognize what pain is. It's an output from the brain that's trying to tell us that there's threat somewhere. Sometimes that threat is important to pay attention to, and then there are other times that the circuitry, you know, our nervous system can get thrown off. For the sake of this conversation, we're going to keep it to non-chronic pain. You know, we'll talk about it as we get down. You know, when we talk about chronic pain, there's long-standing pain. So, you know, something that's recurring, you know, 6 weeks, 12 weeks, 6 months. But then we also have to look at persistent pain, which is someone who has the central sensitization, the circuitry is thrown off. They may also have depression, anxiety. There's psychosocial stuff going on. So that's more pain science education. We're not going to go that far into the weeds. We're going to keep it a little more simple for everyone. So chronic is just going to be defined as something longer than 6 weeks or something that's recurring. Now, we usually go about, and when I say we, you know, physical therapists or anyone in the healthcare field, or even when you're dealing with personal trainers and some strength and conditioning coaches, we usually will go about asking people their pain levels using what's called the numeric pain rating scale, which is just your traditional 0 to 10 scale. So how bad is your pain? Can you rate it? 0 being none, 10 is basically you have to go to the emergency room. How often, Adam, do you find yourself using that scale with clients and members?
All the time. All the time. Pretty much any time anybody says that something hurt, you know, I was doing, you know, I'll go through the comments on a workout that I gave somebody or whatever, and oh, this caused me pain. I'll follow up on a scale of 1 to 10, where do you place it? Or on the flip side to that, when somebody says, I had some pain, but I worked through it, it wasn't too bad, then I use it in that scenario too. Because you kind of get, you can get two sides to the same coin. You know, you can get somebody who doesn't want to do something because there's pain, but you also can get somebody who pushes through it when maybe they shouldn't.
Sure.
So I tend to use it on both sides, or like a little bit prescriptive too. Like, okay, it hurt. I'm okay with you still doing that exercise as long as as long as it's staying below a 4 or a 5 on a scale of 1 to 10.
Sure.
You know, something along those lines. And usually when I stick to that kind of verbiage, I don't run into it. It's, I can't think of a time when I've said, like, oh, it's between, you know, keep it under 4 or 5, and then, you know, 2 weeks later they're like, oh, I kept doing it, now it's a 10. I haven't run into that yet, so it seems to be working pretty well the way I use it.
Yeah, and the scale I think works well because it kind of allows us to do kind of a test retest model. How's it feel now? And in 5 minutes, how's it feel? Is it in the same location? I just generally find people have a hard time describing their pain.
Yep.
So oftentimes when we just have discomfort, it's nothing that's significant, but just discomfort. You know, sometimes people will take that as pain, and then sometimes, you know, when it is pain, you know, you get someone with that high pain threshold and they say, you know, it's just this thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, this thing to you may be a 15 out of 10 to someone else.
Right.
So let's try to define what that is. But I usually like to ask, you know, where it is. Is it equal on both sides? Because also when someone's working out, you get to a certain point, you do get transient muscle soreness. So, you know, the acute DOMS instead of delayed onset muscle soreness. So if it's bilateral, so both sides, and it's symmetrical, usually I'm not going to be as worried about it unless someone fell on their neck.
Right.
Got hit in the spine with a barbell. Then I'd be more concerned that there could be compression of the spinal cord, but there are going to be other signs and symptoms associated with it. But if they come in and say, man, my shoulders are sore today, or my shoulders hurt, oh, and then it's, well, did you do anything that you think could cause them to be this way? Well, I did overhead presses at the gym. Okay, is it equal on both sides? Yes. Okay, give it 72 hours, you're probably going to be fine. Whereas if someone comes in, you know, my left shoulder hurts. Okay, what were you doing? Overhead pressing. It was fine after the workout. I could barely move my arm today. And it's a 5. Well, how does your other arm feel? It's a 0. I have no pain in the other side. Okay, now it's an asymmetry. Mm-hmm. Now we need to pay attention to it. So I usually like to ask that question as well. Now, the reason I ask the how bad is the pain is, one, it's easily scalable. And it's an easy test retest. But I look at it in terms of severity. If someone comes in and says, my pain level is a 1, not very severe in the scheme of things. So generally, I define it as a 1, 2, or 3 is going to be mild. 4, 5, or 6 generally are going to be moderate. And then 7 through 10, we're going to be severe. When people start saying it's a 7, 8, 9, or a 10, how long is it lasting? Things along those lines. However, those are usually the times I'm making modifications immediately, or we're avoiding whatever can provoke it that high. Because I just don't want to run the risk unless I can examine it. That's really the big thing. If I can evaluate it, examine it, that's one thing. But if someone's out in the gym or even myself, just don't do anything to piss it off any worse right now.
Right.
That's. I'm also paying attention to what we would also define as irritability. So that basically is your tissue's ability to handle stress. Generally, when someone's conditioned, you have a very low irritability, or no irritability for that matter. So let's say you do an hour-long training session, you feel muscle soreness, you feel fine the next day. You have no irritability to the area, versus when I do 5 minutes of exercise, my pain shoots up to a 5, and then it takes 2 days to go away. You know, that is a high irritability, and that's what we want to try to avoid. So more importantly than severity, I pay attention to irritability, because that lets me know what they can do for modifications, how hard they can push themselves. And it is possible for someone to have a high severity with low irritability. So think of a marathon runner, they're at mile 21, their pains are at an 8 out of 10, but they stop running, it goes away in a couple hours. I'm fine with that. You know, that's based off of the given activity. So, you know, really I try to define it as severity and irritability, where are we at in that given moment. High irritability, again, I'm automatically going right with modifications. So that's typically how I use it and why I use it. And I know in the physical therapy field, or at least some clinicians in the physical therapy field, look at that as well, because we have to make sure when we're examining them, we don't piss off their symptoms. Because if they don't come down for 2 to 3 days, it reduces buy-in from the patient. Plus, they just don't like you when you cause their symptoms unless you can do something to take it away,
right?
Which is the nice part. Now, what are some other questions with that? So NPRS, and I also talked about severity, irritability, same side. What other questions do you like to ask when someone comes to you and says, ooh, I have pain?
So what movement causes it? I mean, that's kind of the obvious one. What direction? You know, it, especially when we're talking about like shoulder pain, joints that have a bigger range of motion. With knee pain, you can pretty much like, okay, try stretching your quads, rolling, that kind of thing. Does the pain go away?
Mm-hmm.
Well, with a shoulder joint, hip joint, ankle, it can be a little bit more, it can be a little different from, you know, it could be, oh, I can reach up overhead fine, but I come out to the side and it feels like somebody shot me in the arm. Or, you know, I can reach across my body fine, but if I try to put my hand behind the back, behind my back, it kills. Or, you know, I'm fine if I do a front squat, but if I try to do a back squat, no go. It's kind of like defining what movement causes the pain in terms of like what way the joint is going.
Yep.
And what specific exercise causes the pain, and kind of working backwards from there.
Sure.
You know, running into some specific situations, I know with elbow, I tend to have to ask a few more questions, because then we're talking about carrying angles and all that sort of stuff. Like, just like if they're holding the weight and it hurts to hold the weight. Okay, the only thing that really makes sense there, if they're, you know, a farmer's carry, they're just holding a weight for a single leg deadlift, it might be a carrying angle, in which case a lot of times I'm, you know, okay, keep a slight bend in your arm. Does that make it any better? Yes, no. If it's really bad, send me a picture. I want to see if you have an excessive angle. What it really depends person to person, but I'm usually just checking what movement hurts it, what direction, what specific exercise, and then I kind of start narrowing in with some other questions.
Yeah, so understanding the pattern that makes it worse or at least provokes their symptoms, right away I usually will tell students, you know, at least gives us an idea of what not to do in that given moment.
Yep.
So if there's, especially if they're in the gym working out, it's okay, for the short term, avoid X, Y, and Z. Unless you can make immediate changes with your intervention, so like if someone comes in for manual therapy, my goal is to then take that bad position, let's say low back pain, someone bends backwards, ouch, ouch, there's my pain. Well, can I do something to change that immediately? And then if I can, then I'm less likely to say, you know, don't do these positions in the gym, but do these exercises between sets to now offset that given stress. So again, I compared to you, I think I have an unfair advantage only because I'm allowed to do hands-on stuff. So I can get in there and try to provide an intervention. But just with the people coming in, like if there are times I'll open the door to go out to the bathroom in between patients and someone will catch me. Hey, this hurts. All right, real quick, what makes it worse? Okay, don't do that. And it seems kind of simple, but for the time being, if it pisses off, don't do it.
Right.
We're reducing irritability. But I'll also say, have you found anything that makes it feel better? You know, same thing. Let's go with the person with low back pain. You know, anytime I bend down to trap bar deadlift, it hurts my back. I feel like I need to bend backwards. So you're telling me bending backwards reduces those symptoms. It makes you feel better. Yes. Well, maybe it's something that we may want to try more often. So bend backwards more. Do it before your next set. Does it make you feel any better? So that's typically why I like that as well. Plus, I want to make sure if someone says, yeah, I'm self-medicating with, you know, painkillers and booze, it's like, right, let's try to find better strategies than that. So I do like to ask those questions as well. I don't know if you ever have to get that far into the weeds with people. And quite often, they usually end up telling me these things. I don't even have to dig.
You right,
know, yeah. Like, self-medicate. I'm like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
Or it's like, all right, my license tells me I have to ask now.
Right.
But I really don't want to.
Right.
So it's like, the less I know, the better, but I have to document it. Now, I'd say, for the most part, you know, I that's my profession, is dealing with people with pain, you know, and so I probably end up seeing a little bit more than you do. But the one thing we have in common, we both deal with active individuals. And the biggest question that I'll hear from people is, can I train? So just, you know I probably should have started off with this question. Just One answer.
Yes. Oh,
there you go. Sorry. See, that's all right.
I thought you were going to stop right there. My bad.
No. And it's the right answer. You know, I was going to say, do you think people should train even if they have pain? And we're not asking the type of pain right now. Just in general, you should not stop if you have pain. There's always a modification that can be had. There's always other exercises that we can work on. If you have some low back pain, but we realize we can put you in a neutral position, teach you how to brace your core, you still have your pushing muscles that you can use, you still have your pulling muscles that you can use, there's still certain types of lower body movements, we can do a hip hinge pattern, you still need to train. You know, your low back in the scheme of things is a small percentage of the overall system. There are ways we can still challenge the overall system to give you a training effect while your back is healing. And this is where I think a lot of movement professionals, a lot of trainers potentially, a lot of PTs, a lot of MDs, a lot of orthopedic surgeons, you know, oh, you have pain, or what's the most common thing you hear? Someone says, I went to the surgeon with this pain, this is what they told me.
Don't lift.
Oh!
Don't pick anything up, don't pick up anything over 15 pounds.
Yeah. Or, I don't want you to do anything for 6 weeks.
Oh, right, yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yep.
Come on! That's
don't use that. Don't use that arm, leg, knee, ankle, hip for the next 3 weeks.
I mean,
or 6 weeks. Yeah.
Especially if it's non-surgical.
Yeah.
You know, I can't even see a time because even in 6 weeks, even if you broke your tibia, they probably have switched you to a walking boot at that point. Which we talked about walking boots.
Let's not get into the boot discussion.
And that's going to cause other problems down the road. But at least it allows people to be weight-bearing.
Right, yes.
And at a certain point, we start seeing callus formation with the fracture. We need weight-bearing to induce adaptations to cause new growth. It's mind-blowing that professionals who are supposed to be helping people with their health are telling them to do everything but work on their health.
But not
only,
move.
Only focus on healing. To me, even if someone had a fractured leg, if we can keep them stable, let's say someone had, you know, broke their ankle, they have a cast midway up their shin. Is there a way we can keep them stable, keep their foot off the ground, and still train things?
Yeah.
You know, they have those little, you know, wheelie carts that they do when someone doesn't want to use crutches.
Yeah.
Well, walk the friggin' wheels, make the legs stable, and do your upper body exercises. You know, put a small box underneath. You know, stack up some AirX pads.
We used to have a client, and that's all I'll leave it at because I don't know if, who only had one leg.
Mm.
I've worked with clients with one leg in the past, like literally no other limb on the other side. If we can find a way to work with somebody that literally doesn't have a leg, you can do something if your leg is in, if your entire leg was in a cast, there's still something you can do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even just sitting exercises would be better than nothing.
Absolutely.
But you got to think at that point, you know, you get a muscular pump action every time you do a muscle contraction, which is good for reducing fluid retention.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's your leg, gravity pulls fluid south first. We need to pump it up and out. That's why they usually give people like ankle pumps when they have a sprained ankle. So, of course, when you're in the cast, you can't do the ankle pumps. But maybe you do some low-level muscular contractions. Maybe you work the upper body. So it helps with swelling and inflammation. It gets new blood flow to the area. And that's where our nutrients are coming from. It's coming from oxygen-rich blood flow. So I really don't know why.
See, to me, sitting around isn't healing. I mean, like, completely stopping using something isn't healing. It's waiting.
It's wasting away.
Yeah,
That's the hard part. You know, and I'll usually, like the person we talked about who was told don't do anything for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You may take stress off the affected tissue to reduce sensitivity, but you've deconditioned yourself. So now you're going to have the pains of reconditioning when you start up 6 weeks later.
Yep.
Whatever. I mean, I guess in that case, whatever medical professional provided that recommendation did his job by taking away that immediate pain.
Right.
However, they didn't account for the aftermath of deconditioning.
Mm-hmm.
So and that's what kills me, because now we have to work our way back through the reconditioning process, which for most of us who have been training for a long time is easier than someone new starting out. But then if you don't correct things in the meantime, the initial problem is just going to come back. You didn't find the root cause of all this. You know, and this is specifically if we're talking about more of a musculoskeletal repetitive stress type issue. If someone's fallen on an outstretched hand or rolled their ankle or fell and fractured their coccyx because they fell backwards, you know, those things we can't really change. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the unfortunate reality. But for most of us that train all the time, you know, the biggest concern is repetitive stress injuries, whether we choose to believe it or not. You know, causes joint compression and tendinitis and tendinosis, and you know, even look at the case of, you know, if I can bring up your thigh that we just treated.
Oh yeah, yeah, go for it.
You know, Adam's got a lot of muscle mass. For those of you who have never seen Adam, lots of muscle mass. Still has very good flexibility, but he trains a lot, and you're training more now too than you have previously. Plays soccer and likes to lift heavy things. So all that repetitive stress has to go somewhere. Now Adam's done enough with his leg where, okay, we need to make sure that you're foam rolling and stretching and lacrosse balling, and he did all that, and finally said, hey, do you mind, you know, jabbing me with some dry needles? And we did that, and you know, we'll probably do it again. But the point of all this is Adam understands that what he does is probably going to cause a soft tissue reaction at some point. He's not kidding himself saying, oh, I'm going to be pain-free forever. Mm-hmm. Did you have to stop your training when you had that quad pain?
No, I just had to. I had to adjust.
Modified.
Yep.
Oh my God. So you didn't take six weeks off?
Nope.
Holy crap. But again, it's also, now again, I understand it's different. You know, Adam and I also know what to look for. We're also going to be a lot more cavalier with ourselves versus someone who we're trying to help for the long term. So, you know, for me, it's like, oh, squatting hurts. Well, let me try squatting today to see if it still hurts.
Right.
If it doesn't hurt, great, keep going. If it does, how bad is it going to get? Whereas someone else, I'd say, let's hold off on squatting for a little bit and then we'll reintroduce it. But that's, we're all going to have these repetitive stress injuries, and sometimes they're going to be worse than others. But we should never take time off. There's really only one time or one scenario that I would ever say, listen, you probably shouldn't train today. And even from an injury status standpoint, I don't even find myself saying that. Mm-hmm. However, if I think the potential is high that you are going to make yourself worse, mm-hmm. you know, potentially significantly worse, I'm going to tell you to back off. And that's been rare over the last 5 years that I tell people that, just because I always want to try to find a way to do it. And then if someone's sick, and I'm not talking like the common cold,
right?
You know, a little sniffle here and there, but if you're hacking your lungs up, if you're sniffling, your nose is running every 2 seconds,
everything, you know, hurts,
brain fog,
you
know, you didn't sleep great, shut it down. Mm-hmm. Just shut it down. It's just not worth it. Now, the low motivation days, and we've discussed this before, those are the days you should get to the gym. Because usually those are the days that end up being your best days. I've had a lot of them, you know, and I know this is off topic, but the low motivation days, I find, are the ones that really make the difference. You know, you switch up the exercises a little bit to do something that you don't hate, becomes a good day.
Right.
But we'll get back on track as far as pain's concerned. Now, the back to the whole start of all this was, you know, people asking us, can I still train? It rarely ever is the point where we say, hey, let's take the time off. But usually I'll start them off as far as really your warm-up is going to tell us what can be done. So if someone says, can I train with pain? Yes, you can. Mm-hmm. Where do you take them next? What things do you educate them on in order to say, you know, this path is a red light, don't do it. This path is a green light, keep going. So what do you take them through?
So I'll go through, you know, I'll usually tell people, okay, let's do the warm up. Let's see if you feel better afterwards. If you don't, then we know that it's something we have to be a little bit more cautious with. But if you feel significantly better, you know, what, maybe pain free is a little bit of a pipe dream.
Yeah, but exactly.
But if it greatly reduces what you're feeling, the tightness, the pain, the soreness, whatever it may be, then you're probably in a good spot. We still have to be cognizant of it. If it starts to tighten up or that pain starts to increase again, okay, we got to back it off. We maybe have to change up the exercise a little bit. But if we go through the warm-up and at the end of the warm-up, you feel pretty much the same way as you did before this injury happened, maybe with a little bit of lingering soreness, then we're okay to do about what we did before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depending on the individual, if it's, you know, somebody who's maybe a little bit tighter, doesn't move as well, maybe that day we're, you know, being careful on some of the more ballistic stuff. You know, we're being careful on jumping or, you know, explosive, not even Olympic lifts, but just explode, like kettlebell swing, stuff like that. You know, maybe we're watching that or starting a little slower. Okay, normally maybe you'd start by swinging a 53-pound kettlebell.
Yeah.
Let's start a little lower, make sure that it doesn't set anything off, and if that feels good, we can increase it, rinse and repeat.
Correct. Yeah, so I usually will tell everyone 5 minutes of a dedicated warm-up, you know, and usually that's including lacrosse ball work, foam rolling, you know. Typically, I like them to get on like the bike or something, mm-hmm. you know. So get on that and really ask yourself after 5 minutes, how do I feel? Oh, I feel like I loosened up. All right, that's a day that I'm willing. Push yourself appropriately. Mm-hmm. You know, if you feel like you can throttle it up, throttle it up. I'm not going to worry. If someone says, I feel about the same, you can work out, but that's not the day to take a chance.
Right.
You know, don't be breaking any personal records that day. If someone's worse from the warm-up, that's probably the time where it's like, all right, let's drastically reduce what we're doing, or you know what, you better sit this one out.
Yeah.
It's never happened where someone felt worse from the warm up.
Nope.
So luckily I've never had to deal with that. The size of the affected area, you know, I also pay attention to that. Again, if it's that someone who is coming in, they're sick, their whole body aches, it's like, this is probably not like an injury, you know? So if you're sick, don't get the rest of us sick. I mean, just don't be a dick, stay home. But if someone comes in, my shoulder hurts, my hip hurts, my ankle hurts, all right, is it localized? Yes. In all three areas? Yes. Do they radiate? No. Okay. Can you keep your feet fixed to the ground? Does it reduce your ankle pain and your hip pain, and it will allow you to work your upper body? Yes. Okay. We know we can at least fix the feet. Now, if we keep your elbow in on pressing movements, does that make the shoulder better? Yes. Okay. So now we know if we keep your elbow in, feet fixed, you can do standing up exercises. And that way we got around your shoulder. We'd probably want to avoid potentially push-ups from the ground. We could probably do them elevated. And we'd probably back off from the bench press for the day.
Right.
You know, or switch to a bench, a dumbbell version of the bench, where you can draw your elbows in. Now, I don't know how you feel about it, but when someone has a diffuse pain that they can't describe, I always have to wonder, is it mechanical or not? So I don't know if that's anything you've ever had to learn about over your career, but typically if something can change with movement,
mm-hmm.
that's good. That's what we want. You know, can you, like people that say, oh, my pain wakes me up at night. Okay, can you change positions, your pain goes away, and you can fall back asleep? Yes. Great sign. There are instances where people will have what's called non-mechanical pain, where it's unrelenting. You cannot find a position that takes it away. That's more concerning. Again, non-musculoskeletal. Do I always freak out about it? No. But if there are other symptoms associated with that, like for example, if someone has unrelenting pain, true pain that never changes, they've had a history of cancer, they're over the age of 50, they've had unexplained weight changes. All right. This is not a musculoskeletal problem. We need to get this looked at. So that's why I typically ask about the affected size of the area. And then I'll ask these follow-up questions too that I typically don't ask. But again, we need to make sure people are safe at the end of the day. And if it requires other medical attention, then we'll certainly go there. But again, rare, outside of the PT office, it's rare I ever have to deal with that. So, you know, again, probably from a mechanical standpoint, you're just looking to see if movement makes them feel better in general. Whereas I just have to make sure there's nothing more sinister that's going on. But fortunately, knock on wood, I haven't had to deal with that too much. Now, I think the big part that we have listed next is defining acute versus chronic pain. And in the beginning, I set everyone up for success where we're not talking about, you know, the nervous system is messing with you type pain. Chronic pain for us is going to be the recurrent symptom or the acute on chronic flare up. Now, let's say an individual comes in, I rolled my ankle last night. Mm-hmm. Are you okay with them training?
Yeah.
Okay, and what type of modifications would you make for this person to allow them to still train?
I am trying to keep them as stable as possible. Bilateral stuff, I'm trying to, or, you know, unilateral where that leg does not have to be controlling your balance.
Yeah.
I mean, like a, you know, if you did like a TRX lunge, I suppose maybe if it's not that bad, if they're like, oh, my pain's a 3 today, maybe I'd be okay trying like a TRX split squat, you know, where they have a little bit of help if they were to lose their balance. But for the most part, I'm trying to keep them grounded. I'm not trying to do anything that goes through that extension cycle through their ankle. You know, the pushing off the toes is going to be painful and unstable too.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and keep them on the ground, not getting up and down off of things too much, or anything where they could like step on the edge of it by accident and roll it again. I'm really just being careful of the explosive stuff or stuff that I know is going to require ankle stabilization, because it's A, it's probably going to hurt, and B, that stabilization probably isn't going to be there.
Yeah, and I'd say from an acute standpoint for me, if they come walking in, I'm not really worried about it.
Yeah.
Because when someone rolls their ankle, we have a set of rules called the Ottawa Ankle Rules that helps us decide if someone needs to go get a radiograph or an x-ray. So if someone can take 5 steps, even with limping, and as long as they don't have tenderness either in the foot, so what's called the navicular or the cuboid, and then on the fibular or the on the fibular head or the base of the fibula and then the base of the tibia, we don't have to send them off for x-rays. So that's the nice part. And the test is 100% sensitive. So it's good at ruling out people that would actually need x-rays. So if they're walking in, they're good. You know, really the goal within the first 72 hours is don't damage it anymore. So for the first 72 hours, it's, you know, you can take some time off, or, you know, if just standing there is tolerable, then that's where we're going to live. And then once the swelling starts to go down, then we can start to slowly ramp things up. You know, of course, if it's a grade 1, they'll be probably in 5 to 7 days, they're going to feel fine, even though they're still healing. So it really depends on the grade. I think where it gets dicey is that person who's rolled their ankle 100 times. You know, they roll it and it doesn't even get injured at this point. They'll just be walking along and it gives out and collapses. Am I worried about damaging the tissue as much? Not necessarily. I don't treat it like an acute injury. I'm willing to stress the tissue more. But am I still going to be safe with jumping activities? Sure. Like, I probably wouldn't do single leg jumping activities with them, but a bilateral box jump I'd be fine with. You know, or even if we switched it up and said in acute shoulder pain, so let's say someone was doing a push-up, felt an acute pop and couldn't lift their arm, versus someone who has had recurrent subluxations, where it's not necessarily an acute injury, but, you know, one, you need to let the tissue heal. The other one, you need to keep the tissue stable. Because unfortunately, if that chronic condition becomes too unstable, that can lead to tissue damage. And that's what we have to pay attention to. I'd say for the most part, and again, this is a generalization, I'm dealing mostly with acute on chronic flare-ups. The problem's been there over and over again, and it's never been corrected. And then someone may get a small flare-up, you know, goes away in a couple days, they don't do anything about it, it comes back 6 weeks later. You know, that's more what I typically will see. And so then we give them stuff to work on in the interim. You know, there's our foam rolling, our stretching, our mobility work. You know, can we keep the tissue pliable? Can we improve our flexibility? Can we improve our mobility while still working out? You know, really just comes to offsetting the amount of stress that we place on our body. Are there any specific rules that you have as far as acute versus chronic? What you tell them, what you ask them to expect, training volume, things along those lines?
Yeah, depending on the affected joint, sometimes I'll adjust the volume. It really hasn't happened that much. I haven't really had many clients that have had a super pronounced issue on one side but not the other.
Yeah.
But if it is something like that, I have adjusted, you know, how it's done. I remember, you know, a client that both you and I saw at one point. I remember when the pain was really bad, I had him doing, you know, like 8 split squats on one side, and then the other side I only had him doing 3, but it was a speed of movement. I very rarely have done something that different.
Mm-hmm.
I have done it. Outside of that, I mean, I'm continually asking them, what's it feel like? It shouldn't feel sharp. It shouldn't feel shooting. If that happens, back off that exercise and let me know. Is it actively getting worse?
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about that before on here. You know, it maybe the pain's at a 3. Okay, after 3 sets, is it still a 3? Is it a 5? Is it a 7?
Yeah.
If it's going the wrong direction after a couple of sets, then
yeah,
cut it.
Stop what you're currently doing.
Yeah.
And either modify it or shut it down.
Exactly.
You know, but at least they tried it.
Right.
That's the big thing. Instead of just staying home and not doing anything. Because again, then our conditioning goes in the wrong direction. Now we also have to define the types, and you already started to talk about sharp and shooting. And developing the or gathering the descriptors can be important too, because it can tell you where the pain is coming from. So I'd say more often than not, with a more acute symptom or something that's more disc related, you can get sharp and you can also get shooting.
Yep.
Nerve stuff, you can get shooting. One thing with a disc that we have to be aware of is you can also develop something that's called latency. So you ask them to do something, they don't have pain right away, and then 30, 40 seconds later, it drifts in.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be mindful of that. I'm more concerning with burning, numbness, and tingling. And a lot of people get it. So people will come in, do you get numbness and tingling? Yes. When? Well, it's when I'm playing on my phone too much. Well, I do too.
Yeah.
That's nothing to worry about. Or the people that I sleep on my side, I wake up, my hand's numb. All right, that's normal numbness and tingling. But ideally, if you are doing, let's say push-ups, you should not get numbness and tingling going all the way down to your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you have to try to determine, is it a neck problem? Is it a brachial plexus problem? Is it a peripheral nerve entrapment coming down the arm itself? So that's what I don't like to hear. Now, burning sometimes, I typically find that burning can be associated with an eccentrically loaded muscle. So, for example, you get the person who's very rounded forward. They have increased forward rotation of their shoulder blades or protraction. So now all their scapular retractors are stretched out to the max. They don't just turn off. There's a low level of contraction that's happening. And they'll usually say, yeah, it feels like it's burning between my shoulder blades. I just have typically found over the years that it's just muscle. And if you poke into it, you can technically recreate it. You pull the shoulder blades back so it takes slack off or put slack on the tissue. They feel much better. What I don't want to see is, oh, when I tip my head backwards, it burns between my shoulder blades. Because you're probably hitting a disc. You could be hitting a nerve root. So it's understanding when the pain is inappropriate pain and when the pain is not. And if you tip your head backwards and you get shooting pain down the arm, across the top of the shoulder blade, and down the inside border of the shoulder blade, that's not good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not saying it's bad, but it's not good. That's not normal. So we want to make sure that we're able to work around that. Now, even if someone came in, and this segues right into the next part that we talked about, training with pain, we do know that if someone keeps a neutral head position, they say, my symptoms are better. Well, now it's my goal to give them exercise modifications that keep a neutral position.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if it is coming from the spine, chances are they can move the arm around and that's not going to be too much of the issue. So that one to me is an easy one. Same thing, low back pain. Stay away from your end ranges until we can figure out what's going on. So that's an easy one. Now, I'll ask you. Let's say someone has knee pain. They say, when I try to do a squat, it hurts. So what are some modifications you're going to do right off the bat that would still allow them to squat relatively pain-free?
The first thing I'm doing is doing something to affect their ankle mobility, mm-hmm. whether that be actual stretches or in a scenario where they've already warmed up and maybe we're just testing some things out. It could be elevating their heels on some plates. It mm-hmm. could be turning their toes slightly outwards. I mean, assuming that I'm, you know, they're not just going to, you know, the absolute end range, like, okay, there's nothing wrong with your ankle mobility, something, you know what I mean? Unless it's like glaringly obvious that it's not their ankle mobility, that's usually the first thing I'm checking.
Sure.
Try turning your toes out slightly if they're straight ahead. Maybe put your heels up on on plates, on boards. That's usually the first thing I'm checking.
Yep.
If that makes no difference, then I'm maybe looking at what their knees are doing. Are they collapsing in when they're coming down or going back up?
Yep.
I mean, is there, and we know that a little bit of valgus isn't a big deal, but a lot of valgus, well, a lot of valgus or anything is not good. So is that happening? No. Okay. So then from there, it's probably a tissue extensibility kind of thing.
Correct.
Or in my opinion, that's what, or in my next step. So then it's, okay, try rolling it or just, you know, grab a, I've done it with a kettlebell or a, what do they call those things? Like the little piece of bar, like Rogue sells them. It just looks like they cut a piece out of the barbell. It looks like a tiger tail, but it's just a piece of barbell.
I haven't seen that yet.
We have one. There's one in the gym, but regardless, something to like really dig in just at sure. the bottom of the quad in certain situations. And then if they get up and that's better, you know, it the pain is almost completely gone or it's significantly decreased. Okay, we know that it was a tissue thing versus a lack of, granted, tissue and lack of mobility go hand in hand, but you know what I mean. It's probably just a tightness thing more than it is an actual joint issue thing.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I usually will start off very similar. I like TRX squats because yeah. I want to unweight them first, because if the pain is caused from a sequencing problem, chances are they're going to get all the way down in that TRX squat and there's really not going to be any major issue. Or even if you have them hold your hands for stability and all of a sudden they drop down lower, it's a sequencing issue. It's a control and stability issue. Versus if the limitation is the same in the TRX, that lets me know it's a mobility problem. And that's when I may start to limit their range of motion. So box squats are another easy option. Goblet squats, you know, 290, I'm okay with in the beginning just because it keeps them vertical a little bit easier. But all the ones that you suggested, I typically run through all those. The feet or heels elevated, I do those quite often just to see if it's an ankle mobility problem. So that's a very easy one. Now, one movement pattern that I think is often just don't do it. That's what usually people are told is the deadlift. Mm-hmm. So that the hip hinge pattern. You know, my back hurts. It hurts when I deadlift. So I'm not going to deadlift. What modifications might you make to allow them to still create a hinging pattern?
So in real severe situations, I might change the deadlift to a bridge of some kind, whether it be a floor bridge or a hip bridge. So on your back, knees bent, feet flat, pretend like you're trying to touch your hip bones to the ceiling. In not as severe of ones, I'm usually limiting the range of motion. I'm turning it more into an RDL rather than a conventional deadlift. And for those of you that don't know what I mean, conventional deadlift means that you're pulling from the floor, which means it requires more joint mobility. So if your hips are tight, if your, you know, knees to a lesser extent, but if your hips are tight, if you can't get your shoulders back, if you don't have the balance to get down that low, you can run into issues. Whereas if an RDL is basically standing up tall, and you go just to the knees and back up. So it's cutting the motion almost in half, pretty much in half.
It absolutely chaps my ass when I see people going so far down to the ground with an RDL.
Oh, God, I can't stand it.
Like, absolutely just blows my mind when I see people doing that, yeah. because either they just watched it somewhere,
yeah.
or if they had a trainer, that trainer should be shot.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll let people go slightly past their knees, but when I see people going all the way down to their right. ankles, just letting the weights hit the ground, I'm like, oh man, you're bypassing the hip hinge at that point. It's yeah. all just flexion of the spine. Oh, you are just asking for a problem.
Yeah, it. Yeah.
Well, the big thing is too. I'm not. It's either younger males that mm-hmm. don't typically know what they're doing, or very flexible females
yes.
that want to feel like it's doing something. And it's like, oh, it's doing something. It's you're gonna cause a problem at some point. Either yeah. it's a muscle strain or whatever it may be, but you will. That's gonna damage you. So, but RDL is typically where I go if it's a conventional deadlift or a trap bar deadlift. Mm-hmm. It may even start with a PVC pipe or, yep. or dumbbells or kettlebells. But just teaching them, really, your hips just go back and forth. Your knees don't really change. So really, stay on this plane, you'll be good to go. I think if you can regroove that pattern and then you can have it work with the knee bending and extending, people are better at deadlifting. The problem is with the trap bar, and we've talked about this before, is depending on where your hand placement is relative to your midfoot, either makes it a trap bar deadlift or a trap bar squat.
Right.
When your hands are back a little bit further towards kind of your midfoot to your heel, and this is with your arms straight down by your sides, that's more of a squatting pattern. People make it more quad dominant versus if you just were to shift your body weight forward a little bit more and your arms are a little in front of the ankle joints, then that becomes more of a deadlift pattern, more like a conventional deadlift. I'm not against either one, but again, I would elevate them off the ground, mm-hmm. Maybe give them lighter weights, things along those lines. So nothing that I'd be too concerned with. We'll do one more of these. What about bench pressing?
Bench pressing, I don't have a problem with as long as your body doesn't have a problem with it. I know that sounds like a weird way to put it, but...
Yeah, let's say someone comes in, I just benched, my shoulder hurts. How are you going to modify it for me?
Dumbbells. Dumbbell bench press.
Now, why are you picking dumbbells?
Because you can adjust the hand, the hand placement, hand movement. Why am yep. I having such a hard shoulder mechanics? Whatever. There's a much simpler way to say this. It's not coming to me.
Yeah. But. So let me try to jump in.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. And this is where I was hoping you were going with it. The bar, unfortunately, once your hands are on it, you're now in a fixed path and you're at the mercy of the bar.
Yeah.
So with the dumbbell, because you're doing it one on each side, I mean, you could be doing a single arm one, but for the sake of the conversation, you have one on each side. You can adjust them both accordingly to put them in an optimal position. Hopefully it's symmetrical.
Yeah.
If it's not, then we go on and try to correct that. But you have more control now of the dumbbell compared to a barbell. The only thing you're really controlling is, can you let the weight not slam off your chest, and can you get it off of you when you need to? So that's exactly where I go. Now let's say they try the dumbbell. Ouch, that hurts. Where are you going next?
A totally different exercise.
Yeah, what would you do if you still want a pushing pattern? What are you going to do next?
Depends. See, I personally have more success doing a dumbbell bench press than I do a push-up
mm-hmm.
because their hands are still, they're not fixed in the same way. There's more movement than yep. you're able to do on a bench press, but it's still closer to a closed, well, I mean, it is technically a closed chain, but... I guess technically barbells and open chain. Sorry. Anyways, maybe band chest press, maybe floor presses. So
yep.
cutting down the range of motion, because most people don't have trouble with a floor press because you're cutting out. A lot of people, when they have pain with a press, it's because, or the dumbbell press at least, it's because they're coming too far down.
Yeah.
So their shoulders are tipping forward. So I am giving them a little bit more stability at the bottom so they can just push. Outside of that, that's the one that if there's nothing that we can seem to do to get rid of that pain, I'm probably either only doing it with the other side, or I'm just changing it to a row for that day.
Hmm.
If I just can't find a way to get rid of it. I'm not sure. What did you have in mind?
Well, I'll typically, again, I like to get them up. So I will try a push-up, and even if it's an elevated push-up, I still try to keep the pushing pattern where I'll get them up and do like a banded chest press.
Mm-hmm.
So that way I'm at least taking the effects of gravity off the front of their shoulder. Can we still get the appropriate muscles working? I typically find that that works well as long as the person is able to go slow and controlled. Problem is with the pushing motion, you're recruiting those muscles in the front. If you do it wrong, you're still going to have the same bad pattern like you did with the bench press. Just the difference is gravity's not pushing directly down into the joint. It's still affecting it, but that's what I typically try to do. If it's an exercise that you're laying down, can we get them upright against gravity, so mm-hmm. standing, and can we change the position? Can we make it feel any better? You know, let the tissue heal from that horizontal position, and then can we get them back down? So, you know, I think we're definitely saying the same thing. I just go about a little bit different way of getting it there. So, all right. Anything else that you want to touch upon for training with pain?
I want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
And I want to see what you think. So I'm going to pull this up real quick. I should have had it ready. But I saw a post from a trainer, strength and conditioning coach that I follow who reposted something from another trainer that I know of,
mm-hmm.
Who said deadlifting has the biggest return on investment, ROI, of any exercise for health, also the biggest risk. I'm curious what you feel like on that, because I personally don't agree.
Read it one more time.
Deadlifting has the biggest ROI of any exercise for health, also the biggest risk.
I wouldn't say it has the biggest risk.
I don't think so either.
I don't necessarily say it has the biggest ROI.
Well, okay.
But I don't think it poses the biggest risk. I mean, if someone's trying to do a 900-pound deadlift,
well, okay,
that's different. But let's say someone's just grooving the pattern of deadlifting because it helps you pick things off the ground. As long as you're practicing the motor pattern with some resistance to mm-hmm. groove and get feedback, I don't. If you're continually trying to push your limits, sure, there's risk associated with it, but that's every exercise.
Right.
Bench press, if you're going for a 500-pound bench, you're going to hurt your shoulders. If you're going for a 1,000-pound squat, something's going to give. So I don't want to say they're wrong, because...
I know, there's not a lot of information there.
Who am I to say?
Right.
But is it incomplete and potentially short-sighted? Yeah. Yeah, I could say that. Because you could turn that around, pick any exercise, and say the same thing.
Right.
You know, squats. Greatest benefit of your health with the biggest risk.
See, I personally think that if I had somebody who said, I can do one or the other, my main goal is to not get hurt, and I have two choices. I can either do all squatting patterns or all hinging patterns. I'm sending them to the hinge, personally. I know that's a little bit, but a back squat compared to a deadlift assumes more need for joint mobility throughout the entirety of the system, I think.
Yeah, but I'd say if you're doing a squat correctly, you also have a hinge pattern in there. So yeah. The hinge pattern is kind of the basis of all movement.
Right. I don't know. I was thinking about this last night when I saw that, and I was just curious.
I mean, if someone said to me, would you rather do a trap bar deadlift or a barbell back squat? Just in terms of what's probably going to hurt more, I would pick the trap bar deadlift because right. I don't have anything loading my spine.
Right.
But other than that, if I don't know. I just think that statement's dumb.
That's fair. I felt the same way.
Short-sighted, incomplete. Pick any exercise you want.
Yeah.
You know, you could also say running.
Right. Yep.
You know, so running, you know, greatest ROI on your health, but also poses the greatest risk.
Right.
I mean, so just whoever said it.
Yeah.
They obviously have their reason for saying it. It doesn't necessarily mean we have to agree.
Right.
So.
All right. I'm good.
We got through all of it. So, all right, guys. So hopefully, you know, really the big points of today, you can train with pain. There should always be an appropriate modification. Again, if you get better after your warm-up, it's going to be a good day. If it doesn't get much better, you know, take it slow. You know, everyone has an intuitive sense about their body. So just make sure that you are tapping into that, especially if you have a coach that's always saying push, push, push. You know, we do have to be mindful of that. You're the one that has to live with the pain. So as we're saying, you know, go ahead and train with pain. Just make sure you're being smart about it as well. If anyone has any questions about pain and about training, you know, certainly feel free to reach out to us. That's what we're here for. That's also what we have, you know, my Ask Ross Anything for, which is coming up this tomorrow, actually.
Yep. Well, today when you hear this.
Correct.
Today's Wednesday. This will come out tomorrow Thursday.
So Ask Ross Anything is set up to really help you guys out with questions about health, fitness, rehab, exercises, whatever it may be. So you can always feel free to join the group and send your question in. I can answer that for you. If you need any help with programming, that's what Adam's here with Gray Method for. His email is going to be underneath the description. My full script's going to be there if anyone's interested in supplementation. And you guys know the drill. But as always, it's fun. Hopefully we enjoy the last day of... Actually, it's going to be your first day of December by the time you hear this.
We'll get closer to Christmas.
I know. It's getting faster and faster. and then hopefully in the meantime, you just don't kill anyone when you're Christmas shopping. So, but on that, we'll talk to you guys soon, and we'll be back next week.
Later, guys.
Bye.